everyone, and welcome back to Ginger Gerald, You Lucky Bastard. Can you believe it? This is now episode 8 of this series, which means I've been going at this for 2 months already. Wow, how time flies when you're having a good time. I even got a bit of free promotion at an international conference I attended last week. I was just about to introduce myself before asking the panel a question when this booming voice came over the sound system presenting me to all and sundry as Ginger Gerald, you know, the lucky bastard. Well, at coffee time, I had a queue of people asking me what that was all about. Anyway, I can now proudly confirm that this podcast is being listened to on 6 of the world's 7 continents. So if any of you know any Antarctican penguins, then please get in touch. And if they sign up, and if they listen to me, I'll send you a free Ginger Gerald beer mat. Now, today we're going to talk about back to school. We're going to talk about where, why, and even if your kids should go to school at all when you move and live abroad. For many of you listening in, this is, has been, or will be, a big and stressful question. I've been listening to a couple of pods recently where this very theme is debated at great length and in great detail by a bunch of clearly very learned folk, like myself, and they consistently consider the selection of a school for your child to be the most important decision you have to take when you're moving to live overseas. Well, is that really true? And how would you know that the school or schools you select will turn out to be the right ones in a few weeks or a few months down the line, let alone years? Maybe you're the super organised type of parent who creates a lovely spreadsheet with all of your requirements and criteria. You give them all a weighting and then develop a formula to mathematically select the perfect educational institution. Or maybe you just like the colour of the walls. And who's to say that one person's selection criteria is any better than anyone else's? Maybe the success of your child at school, however you choose to measure that, is more down to your own attitude and your child's approach to engaging. If making friends and picking up the language is the most important factor, then choose a school that does loads of sport, music, drama, or activities. If the most important thing to you is the bit of paper that gets you into university, then maybe look for the more scholarly ones. Now, it's one thing to select the school or schools, but the reality of what goes on at these schools when your kids actually get there is a completely different ballgame. And I have a few Ginger Gerald special tales for you today to make you laugh, maybe cry, and maybe even make you wish you'd stayed in Stoke-on-Trent after all. So how did Ginger Gerald and family deal with this particular hot topic? Well, let's start today by saying that our kids, have experienced a fair few different schooling regime in their time. UK schooling, both primary and secondary, public and private sector. Mexican schooling, primary and secondary. Spanish secondary schooling, US online middle school, and UK home studying for A-levels. So a bunch of different educational solutions at different times and chosen for different reasons. No one-size-fits-all approach from us. In terms of the selection process, sometimes you actually don't have too much choice, which maybe makes your life a little bit easier and takes the pressure off the big decision. For example, there's only one school anywhere near where you live, or only one of them has any spaces left, or maybe there's only one that you can actually afford. The first and definitely the biggest decision we had to make was to select a primary school for our 5-year-old and a secondary school for our 13-year-old when we knew we were moving to Cancun. Now, state schools were out of the question as non-Mexicans aren't allowed to attend. And Cancun at that point wasn't just a spring break playground in the sun for the Americans, but it was already a thriving and rapidly expanding city of 600,000 inhabitants. Nowadays, the city of Cancun alone has well over 1 million inhabitants, and that's the one that they count. So a young and quickly growing population meant that schools were popping up all over the place like wildfire, and offering a great opportunity for someone to make a buck or two. So we had quite a few schools to look at. All the ones we pre-selected were similarly priced. Most of them were in the same area of the city. Many had primary and secondary on the same campus, which was a big plus for us. Most of them were pretty small, just one or two classes per year. All of them at least claimed to be bilingual, meaning that some classes were taught in English and others in Spanish, and even if the English was not really very developed yet. So we set up a bunch of appointments when we visited Cancun before actually moving out there. Now, if you can't remember all the stuff we talked about in the very first episode of Ginger Gerald called D-Day, then look it up and give yourself a gentle reminder. We didn't have a car, so we grabbed a taxi for the day and off we went with pen and paper in hand to score our potential learning centres. And, of course, the 5 and 13-year-olds came with us, which, thinking about it now, must have been really, really nervy and scary for them. Anyway, we knew it wasn't going to be an easy day when the directions to our first school appointment were the following. Take the main road out of town, and after a few kilometres, you'll see a building site on the left. Turn right, and we're down there. Well, Google Maps didn't have things so well covered back then. So off we went into what seemed like the Bronx, and we found about 25 building sites on that main road, and eventually, after tons of wrong turns, death-defying U-turns, panicky phone calls and stopping to ask people who had no clue where any of these new schools were, we finally made it to school number one, which incidentally was also a building site. Now, I know that schools need to use the summer holidays to do their building work, I get that, but half of the schools we visited seemed to be missing a roof or a wall or both, and the chances of them actually being open and ready to give classes was, at least in our minds, somewhat questionable. One school we went into had a beautiful 25-metre outdoor swimming pool and a full-size football pitch, but no classrooms. To be honest, I was quite keen on that choice. Anyway, we reordered our priorities for the selection criteria, and the top one quickly became: make sure the school is actually built, or at least almost. So it was a pleasant surprise when we arrived at schools that were actually built and didn't just need our registration fee to help to finish off the plastering of another classroom. And at those ones, we were shown round, we had a coffee, we sat down, we asked all the right questions like, can the English teacher speak English? Have you had any children who speak no Spanish at all? What exams, homework, courses, curriculum do you follow? How much does it cost? And when does term start? We were under quite a bit of time pressure back then, so we pretty quickly narrowed it down to two or three, which we then reduced our target to one target solution. One single school complex which had a nursery and primary school on one side and a secondary school on the other. Both of them small. Both followed US and Mexican educational systems. Both had the most lovely uniforms. So, decision taken, payment made, job done. Now, what were they really going to be like? Well, classes started at 7 in the morning. And if you arrived late, and by late I mean 1 second past 7 in the morning, then you weren't allowed in. The gates would be locked and there was no negotiating, which meant no school for the kids for that day. Now, we didn't live next door to the school, and driving in Cancun at the best of times felt like you were taking your life into your own hands. So I felt I needed a bit of a buffer to try to guarantee that I would never arrive late. So from Monday to Friday, for 6 long years, our alarm was set at 5:40 a.m. We woke up, breakfasted, left home at 6:20 and arrived at school at 6:50. I didn't think that Ginger Gerald's new and better life in the Caribbean would start quite so early in the day. And the poor kids, they were always shattered in the morning. Now, the primary school was a bit of a mixed bag, but overall, I'd say there were many more positives than there were negatives. EJ learnt to speak Spanish very quickly. The brain's amazing at languages at that age. He loved his football and the food and dressing up every time there was an excuse for the party. And boy, do the Mexicans love a party. One year, he was even selected to light the Olympic flame for the school's sports day. Health and safety wasn't quite at the same level, maybe, as in the UK. And speaking of safety, he'd not been there very long when he came home all excited and told us he'd spent part of his day playing games under his desk. "Why did you do that, son?" we innocently inquired. "Oh, there were guns going off next door, so the teacher told us to play under our table for a bit and to be quiet." Sure enough, it turned out, next door had been raided at gunpoint, not entirely unheard of in these parts, but a bit of a shock to the system when you've just put your kid into a new school and a stark reminder of the reality we had chosen nonetheless. As for secondary school, well, that wasn't such a positive experience, I have to say. Teachers tended not to stay around too long. The reality of living and working in paradise didn't always live up to their expectations. And as some of the staff didn't really want to be there, the quality of everything dropped. Some of the teachers were simply careless. One dropped an entire set of exercise books into the Caribbean on her way home from work one evening. And some of them were just nasty. Outrageously. One of them wrote letters to her ex-pupils just when she left, telling them how they'd all end up as whores living above their parents' garages. Can you believe that? Weird and very, very disturbing. And it wasn't unusual for teachers to get the students to mark their peers' homework and even exams in return for credits. One of the selling points of the school, the secondary school that is, was its success in obtaining US university entrance for its alumni. However, not surprisingly, and that's okay, that didn't extend to getting accepted at a UK university as a UK student. So, to help our daughter Em's chances, she decided to take a few extra higher level Spanish language exams, which the school for some reason either didn't or wouldn't offer. So off we trotted to Mexico City one January for to sit this all-important Spanish exam that was going to help her to get into a UK university. Now, I'm sure you all know this, but Mexico City's at 2,000 metres above sea level, so it gets very, very cold in the winter. We tipped up, me and Em, in our Caribbean shorts and flip-flops, much to the great amusement and horror of the entire queue that we met at 6:30 in the morning. Oh yeah, the exam was at 7 a.m. It all goes off at 7 a.m. in Mexico. Everyone else, of course, was wrapped up in their coats, gloves, scarves, all lovely and warm. Anyway, we lined up. Em's name was on the list. So I wished her good luck, left her to her exam, and I went off in search of a coffee. Feeling quite pleased, to be honest, that despite our stupidity in terms of clothing selection, at least we'd found the right place at the right time and we'd been allowed in. Quite an achievement, Ginger Gerald. Give yourself a pat on the back. Then the phone rang. "Dad, I need a cassette recorder. I haven't got one and they're kicking me out." What a bunch of absolute bastards, I thought. I swear I checked a dozen times with the organiser exactly what Em needed to take with her. And on my phone, I had at least 2 emails from the chief examiner proving that she was in the wrong and Em didn't need a cassette recorder, according to them. But there she sat in front of us, the chief examiner, cool as a bloody cucumber, in complete denial and refusing even to read her own email to me. I'm sure you may well know, and the rest of you may find out, it's not always about what's right and wrong. "No cassette player, no exam," she said. And no exam, potentially, meant no uni for Em. Now, Mexico City's big. I don't need to tell you that. It's very big. But there aren't so many shops selling cassette players at 10 past 7 in the morning. So, angry, frustrated, and really upset, we were just about to throw in the towel and admit defeat when the rather elderly school caretaker, who'd been keeping an eye on us since we turned up in our inappropriate beachwear, indicated for us to follow him. So, curious, we went with him to his tiny but very cute little house at the corner of the posh international school complex. He rummaged around for a while in one of his cupboards, and then he emerged with a vintage but fully functional cassette player for him to borrow. Wow! We gave him a big hug, she took it, ran back to the exam hall, argued her way back in, and passed the exam with flying colours. Oh, and did get into uni, by the way. Now, there are a few elements of this story that I think many of you will be able to relate to. Not specifically connected to schools necessarily, but any type of frustrating administration. I'm assuming you've all listened to my last episode, Blumming Bureaucracy. Anyway, for me, the top two lessons of this story were these. Firstly, never expect things to be the same as you're used to at home. They aren't. And secondly, there's always a hero around the corner, but you never know who it's going to be. So, given our far from ideal secondary school experience, it's perhaps no great surprise that EJ, our five-year-old, didn't follow in his sister's footsteps when it was his time to move up from primary to secondary school. Instead, we opted for an online American middle school, which he could do from home or wherever he happened to be. It was all project-based and discovery learning. It was fantastic. And he still got to play footy with his mates at their traditional school. But do bear in mind that EJ was just beginning full-time academy, tennis academy at this time. So he had plenty of social interactions with his fellow tennis gang. I know that online schooling's definitely not the right choice for every child or every parent. And very few of our friends at the time understood the decision. And many thought it was the wrong thing to do. But it's certainly an option worth considering in certain circumstances. And even more so nowadays in the global world we live in. Now I have to say, the service, resources, content platform and communication from this online American middle school were second to none, and it worked perfectly for a while for EJ and for us. Anyway, then after a year of the online, it was time to move to Mexico, from Mexico to Spain. So yep, time to try out yet another educational system. Now, at the time we were weighing up the options, it was a bit of a grey area as to whether home or online schooling was actually legal or not in Spain. There was a lot of debate about it online, although it was fairly widely practiced, particularly in the sort of sports, tennis community, etc. But the obvious option on the table for us was to go for a tennis plus secondary school package that we were being offered. Now that all sounds very posh and super expensive, but the reality was really very different to that. The school for EJ was a big, old, bright green, rather prison-like building in the centre of Palma de Mallorca. Classes were taught in Spanish and Catalan, which added another little linguistical challenge, of course, and classes for EJ anyway were from 8 a.m. to 12 noon, so at least we got a lie in this time. At 12 noon, the tennis kids were picked up in the oldest of vans imaginable, whisked off to the tennis academy for a quick lunch, then they were on court from 2 to 7 p.m. So pretty long and tiring days from Monday to Friday. And at school, the tennis kids I referred to stuck out a bit like a sore thumb. Firstly, there were only about 8 or 10 of them in a school of maybe 1,000 kids. And they were mainly foreigners, or certainly not locals from Palma. They wore tracksuits all the time. They tended not to smoke or do drugs, which definitely made them a bit of an exception. And of course, they only went there for half a day, much to everybody else's annoyance. So making friends was a bit tricky, as there were no other school activities they could really join in with, and everybody was super jealous of them. Anyway, in terms of the education style itself, it was the total opposite of the lovely, cosy, pressure-free online US middle school system which EJ had just been used to. Here it was much more serious and a lot less fun. More time was spent doing exams than was actually spent teaching anything. And to do well at school, you had to memorise everything and then regurgitate it all onto a bit of paper in an exam. So if you've got a photographic memory, you were a fantastic student. But if you hadn't, tough. EJ got by for the 2 years he was there, and he managed to obtain his secondary school completion certificate without having to resit a year, which is really quite a common thing in Spain, but not without a little bit of help. For example, his physics teacher actually said to him, "I'll mark your paper up a bit to make sure you get a pass so you never have to take a physics class again." Nice guy. Not quite as much help from his English teacher, who once famously said to him in front of the entire class, "You may have an English accent, but I'm the one with the degree in English." Ooh. Oh, and then, funnily enough, they both got stuck together in a lift for about half an hour. So we move to the final chapter, at least for now, of our educational experience trail. The demands of tennis training and competing don't really sit very well with traditional sixth form schooling. So a flexible online option was definitely the way forward for us at that time. The question was, what system? What subjects? And if your whole life is tennis, why even bother? You don't have to. Well, the sad truth for potential pro tennis players and for so many other young sports people is that unless you're in the top 1 or 200 in the world, then there's no way that you can finance yourself. And of course, you're only ever one sprained ankle from the end of your budding career. So online independent study day levels was the option we went for. And with the tremendous help of the lovely Palma College and a great deal of commitment and discipline, EJ did himself proud and came out with 3 excellent A-level results. So there we are, folks. We've talked through primary, secondary, in Mexico, in the UK. We've talked through online. We've talked through homeschooling. We've talked through the Spanish system. And that's a wrap for today, folks. I think that's enough. It's turned out to be maybe a little bit more serious than some of my episodes. Not quite so many funny and embarrassing stories, maybe. And some really quite concerning ones. I think I need a bit of a lie down now. Anyway, thanks for joining us once again. And remember to keep in touch via Facebook or Instagram. Just look up Ginger Gerald, you lucky bastard. Or hashtag GGYLB1 if you're a Twitter fan. Or even on good old-fashioned email to ggylb@outlook.com. Now, next week we're going to line it up and we're going to head into the garden, which will actually be quite a laugh. So whether you're a plant, tree and shrub expert or a total novice, then make sure you've subscribed to ensure you don't miss out on next Thursday's publication of Green Fingers. Have a great week, folks. Bye.
Thank you, Ginger Gerald, for enriching our lives.